I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 550. Sure, I'm a completionist, but I'm lazy too.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
Girl, how you doing?
I'm doing.
That's good. I'm good. You had a good week?
I had a very good week.
Good.
A little tiring on the weekend. Like, I like being popular. I enjoy being around people, but only so much. I get so tired.
People are tiring.
Okay? People tire me out.
And it's like not in like a bad way, although sometimes people are tiring in a bad way. When you have like back to back things, pajama time is so.
Oh my god, you do. You do enjoy it. And like literally from like Thursday of last week up until when we're recording this, I literally had stuff every day.
Girl.
And I'm like, why? Why, Jesus? Like, why?
Don't put that on Jesus. Jesus had nothing to do with that.
Nope. Jesus was like, you can do it. And I was like, I can do it. And then I realized that I'm 33. I'm no longer 21. I do not have the stamina
you over 30 stick?
Yeah. Well, like, we were together on Friday and like... Yeah. I was struggling, and I'm like, I can't be up past 10:30. I'm past my bedtime.
I'm on the dance floor looking at you like, yo.
I was like, I can't do it.
See, where you messed up, where you done goofed AA, Ron, is you should have had a tequila shot.
Probably. But I was just like, and that band was kicking, and it was great. Yeah. It was a great party, but I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. I don't know how. Generation did it, and I don't know how our generation will do it. I don't think the generation after us will.
Our parents and the parents' parents, in two cases, were there getting funky, and you were in the corner like, oh, let me just get to this cake.
Who has parties on Fridays?
Yo, our family.
After a work
day. It's a day that ends in Y. You ready to go?
Okay. No.
So just to give you guys a little bit of backstory, one of our uncles had a 68th birthday party, and a bunch of our family from, like, down the Cape, so, like, the older tribe, as well as I like to call it the new school, so from, like, my generation down, were co-mingled at what was basically a house party that wasn't at anybody's house that we knew.
It was at a house, just not any of ours.
It just wasn't our house. So, like, they rented out... some dude's house, his name was Diddy, because it was Diddy's venue.
Diddy's venue.
And had this great R&B house band. Like, they tore it up with a mixture of old and new. Like, they even did Fireball. We were getting it, because if you haven't picked up on just the rambunctious nature of Panda and I, we come from a long line of partiers.
Yeah, well, I mean...
So, I don't know why you are surprised that we had a party on a Friday night. Any day that ends in Y is a potential party day in our family.
That is true. We did have a little get-together at Auntie's house on a Tuesday, and I was like, who gets together on a Tuesday?
Again, we do. Do you?
I got shit to do.
Do we have an excuse? It's Wednesday. That's great.
I got TPS reports to file.
Let's have a party! That's just how we roll. So the fact that, like, in your 30s, you haven't accepted that about our family,
In my mind, like obviously the next big party is going to be your birthday. And since, like, I'm kind of in the front lines of getting that lined up. It's gonna be a fucking Saturday. It's gonna be at a fucking hotel because I ain't having that. I'm sorry.
You don't want to clean up. You don't want to have to cook. You don't want to have to take food home.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I like to cook. Like, I might make you for my surprise 30th.
I'm gonna tell you right now. Like, I would love some ribs. Some of your ribs.
Like, I will cook you something. It will not be for the whole party because I ain't making ribs for 40-ish people.
No.
Fuck no.
But anyway, so we had a great time at the party, and then we had another function the next day, and then we have another function. Actually, we had three functions the next day. I did not go to any of them.
I couldn't.
You went to one.
Husband's birthday, and I've been doing all this shit for my husband's birthday.
And then the next day after that, you had your hubby's birthday.
Yeah.
And we had two other functions. And
I don't know how people do it.
The other functions.
Like, I don't know how socialites and celebrities do it. Like, all these appearances. How?
That's why you got an assistant and you're like, you're in, you're out. You got 25 minutes. Go. And then they grab you and snatch you and throw you in a car. See, what you need is somebody to grab you and be like, oh, you got another event. We got to go. Oh, we gotta go. Bye. And throw you in a car. That's what you need.
So, like...
Because, like, there's no graceful exit from any of our family events.
No.
You try to make your way to the door.
You cannot Irish exit our events because someone catches you. And then they rat you out.
The dance floor.
And then...
They're going to take you to the bar thinking that you're trying to get a drink. Or they're trying to buy you a drink.
They happen to see you leave, they're like, why didn't they say bye to me? And then you got drama. And no one has time for that.
You have to say goodbye to everybody.
Everybody.
You don't know their name. Because they family. Because you could tell they got somebody's nose or eyebrows. So you got to give them a hug. Be like, oh my God, it was so good to see you. We should see each other more often. Meanwhile, you don't know where the hell they from.
But you know they're related. So you're trying not to side-eye them or nothing.
Every elder has to get a hug. Yep. Even if they're not your elder, like, there's some serious rules as you try to make your way through. So, like, you always have to hope that there's, like, less than 60 people at the party.
Not even that, but you want to hope that at the party there's, like, an exodus hour where, like, no one really wants to say bye, but they want to leave. And once the elders leave, then you could just be whoever you want to be.
Yeah, right.
Because, like, the respect has to be... prevalent when the elders are around, but if the elders dip out, then you're like, all right, they're gone. All right, I had my cake. I said happy birthday. I shook some hands. I dabbed. All right, I'm out.
You got bougie hours, which are while the elders are there, and then when the elders are gone, then you have what I like to refer to as ghetto 30.
Yeah, true.
I
didn't even make it to ghetto 30 on Friday night. Like, I was holding out for that cake. I was trying to make it to cake so I could duck out. And like, I give my husband so much credit because he's like, it's such a different experience for him from, like, his type of parties. And he's like, I'm like, I don't know where they get the energy. I don't. I'm like, this is a new experience.
Anyway, so we had a great time at the party. We're hanging out with family. It's all cool. And then all kinds of other stuff. I'm in the process of editing our Let's Play. One of the first, actually, that you guys will get to see of Panda and I playing together. We played Overclocked.
where we have the DeLorean and we have to overclock to go through time.
No, we gotta build PC towers and you have to put all the right parts in and make sure that they're actually wired.
I'm surprised that's not a game.
So the machine will boot and you've overclocked the processor appropriately. Which could actually be a fun game if you set it up the right way. Like, it could actually be an awesome mobile app game. Somebody build that and just give me, like, you know, 0.2% on the residuals of that. All right, cool. Anyway, so that's coming. Be on the lookout. We'll have announcements on social as the first of those videos go live. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And if you enjoy it, let us know. If you want us to play more of it, let us know. Or if there are other games that you'd like to see us play and do fresh plays of. We are officially calling them Fresh Plays. Just let us know. Hit us up on social. Drop us an email. Because we definitely want, you know, to make sure that you guys get to see some fun stuff. And stuff that you want us to react to and play together. Or, you know, by ourselves. We can do that too. So just let us know. But we're super excited about getting these out. Until then, we got a bunch of game stuff to talk about. Gamescom is happening. I both wish and I'm also grateful that I'm actually not at Gamescom. Like, it is a bucket list item for me to go at least once, just because I think it'd be interesting to see and experience a European video game conference. And I think Gamescom would be the one because it's basically like PAX Ex Machina, so like two, you know.
That's good.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
I just came up with that. Sometimes, you know, you have a cup of coffee and boom, the neurons fire. But I would like to experience because I do think that European conferences for video games and just for, you know, nerdy things in general, movies, comics, you name them, are just different than those that we have here in North America. And I would like to experience that. I'd like to experience what an international, multi-denominational, for lack of a better term, games convention would be like. You know, because you have PC gamers, console gamers, tabletop gamers, you know, you've got just comic fans, you've got people who are fans of different genres, and you still have anime fans that come out to that. And it's all international as well. So it would just be interesting, I think, to be in a place where the vibe is, we're all here because we're fans of these platforms. And this is the commonality that we have because, you know, not everybody that's going to be there necessarily speaks a language that I understand or a language that somebody else may understand. And so this common bond, this common language that we have are these games, these platforms, these characters, these signature, you know, in a series games that we have a love and adoration for. That's the commonality. And so I think that would be really interesting to experience. You know, you do have a little bit of an international audience at various PAXs, especially on West. But it, to me, like, that would be the experience that I was going for, not necessarily just to experience the games, because I have plenty of conferences and expos and shows in North America that I can make it to experience the games. But really, for me, going to Gamescom would be about experiencing the community, the international community. And that's what excites me about trying to do the show. So hopefully, you know, before I get too old to make the trip, because it is a heck of a trip. But I would like to do that one time. So I'm going to be watching the news that comes out of Gamescom. I don't expect a lot of announcements, but I do expect a few. A couple that I want to talk about before, you know, we get into the meat and potatoes of the show are two announcements that really hurt me and my soul that came out this week. One, Crackdown 3 is delayed till 2018. Grumble, 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 grumble. And then the second is, and of course now I'm drawing a blank, there are two competing schools of thought on Crackdown 3. Phil Spencer came out and said that, you know, he was really saddened to make the announcement about the delay, but they wanted to make sure that the game and the experience was absolutely what the players deserved before they released the game. Which is a classy statement, and hey, we've said on this podcast before, if your game's not ready, delay it. Take the time to make it right and make it right. But I played Crackdown 3 when I was at E3 this year for the, like, 16 minutes I was able to be at E3 this year. And I gotta tell you, I didn't see or feel anything wrong with that game. The only thing that I would say is if you are looking for a game or you were trying to make a game that felt different than a previous Crackdown game, then what I played wasn't it, because Crackdown 3 felt like a faster Crackdown 2. You know, with the agility race stuff, the amount of enemies that are on the screen, you know, some of them still felt very cel-shaded in their approach, you know, which is interesting. But I didn't see anything wrong with the aesthetics, I didn't have any glitches, and I must have played that game probably three times in the evening at the event I was at, which was a showcase. I had no problems whatsoever with the game. You know, it wasn't in a place where I felt like, ooh, yeah, this is real buggy, and I don't think that this should be GM right now. I didn't have that feeling at all. To hear that the game wasn't ready, I don't know if, you know, when they made the announcement about Terry Crews's audio and doing agent work, if that was, like, last minute and maybe all that VO wasn't where it was supposed to be. I don't think that it takes a year for VO, but I have some theories. Would you like to hear my main theory?
I would love to hear your theories.
Okay, so my main theory is this. Agents of Mayhem is out, And, yeah. you know, I got deep, deep love for Volition. But I've heard some not great things out the gate about Agents of Mayhem. And it's not surprising a lot of games when they make it to market. There are things that the teams have already worked out, identified as issues between when the GM was pressed and when discs actually make it to market. And that's why you have a lot of day one patches that are critical, and so they won't let you play the game until you get them. I think that there are, looking at some of the critiques that I've seen from critics and journalists, as well as just friends of mine who are gamers that played the game, is that there's definitely some patchwork that needs to be done, which, hey, that's to be expected. But I think that so much time has passed between Crackdown 2 and Crackdown 3. And you look at games like Saints Row 4, Agents of Mayhem that's out right now. You look at games like Splatoon and you look at games like Overwatch, okay, for varying degrees of success and capturing audience and building audience. There's not really anything in the Crackdown game mechanics themselves that is new or nuanced compared to other games that are on the market, right?
Right.
If I changed everything in Agents of Mayhem from purple to blue, would a regular user be able to tell the difference between Crackdown and Agents of Mayhem? Right?
Like, right.
That's a valid question. Because one of these titles is a new IP. The other of these titles is a third of a franchise. If just by simply changing a signature color, if I put person A, who's never played either, and person B, who's never played either, down between the two, would they be able to definitively tell me differences between the two?
Probably not.
And if the answer's no, then you probably ought to take a moment and find something to differentiate you. Because if I can't tell the difference other than the blue pill or the purple pill, then my sales are probably not going to be what I want them to be. I feel like that's what happened.
I'm not sure if that's what my... Because I'm me and my husband are playing Agents of Mayhem right now.
Yep. If you made everything blue.
Right.
And then somebody handed you a copy.
If it seems like it's just a skin, like, I probably wouldn't be able to notice the difference. But I think it's not even the palette that bothers me, because I think there's a link between Agents of Mayhem and Saints Row, the universe. I don't think I'm further in it enough yet to figure out what that is. But I've heard several... I want to say that they seem like throwaway lines that have been said already in our playthrough that make me think, like, yeah, we clearly are going to have a linkage somewhere, but they're just setting that up for the tilt, I think. For me, right now, like, the biggest distraction in the game for me is all the loading screens. Like, you can't get through a three to five minute mission without there being, like, 2 to 3, like, loading screens of, like, the little purple diamonds loading up. And it, like, it cuts you out of the narrative. Like, it forcibly rips you out of the moment. And I'm like, I don't have enough time to, like, bond with these characters that, because you can phase between, you're supposed to be able to phase between 12, and right now we only have 3.
Okay.
That we can, you can phase through, and I think the more we play, the more of them will become available for us to use. But, like, you don't get enough time with any of them to really kind of differentiate them. Like, they're essentially just loadouts of, you know, different skill sets for us right now, because, you know, the great thing about Saints Row was there was this world, and they wanted you to explore every facet of this world. And in Agents of Mayhem, they are not giving us the time for that. I'm all for Volition, and I loved Saints Row, like, through and through. So I thought that this was going to be their way of revitalizing the story, because, I mean, there's not too much else you can do with a universe that really doesn't have humanity anymore or whatever. But still, I was hopeful, and right now, like, I'm worried that they made it too episodic by, like, and not even in the good sense either, which is unfortunate, I think, for it right now. But, like, I'm still fairly early in the game, so maybe that is just the beginning, and they'll cut a lot of those loading points out, because I feel like right now it's the biggest deterrent to my gameplay as of right now. Which is horrible, because it sounds like they've got great voice actors. They have these great characters, but they're just not giving me enough time to realize how good they are or how bad they are. It seems like
It kind of has a weird pacing to it, kind of like a kid show.
Okay.
From my limited interaction with it. So, like, it seems like, oh, there's the bad guy. Shoot the bad guy. Loading screen. Up, oh, the bad guy got away. We gotta go get him again. Cutscene. Loading screen. Wait. Oh, there's a bomb now? Like, it's a little, the pacing's a little.
So here's what I'm going to throw out to you just to, like, kind of mull over, because I know that you're just getting started in the game.
Yeah.
So remember in, I think it was Saints Row the Third, we had that vampire TV show that you had to do.
Yeah, it's kind of a segment, yeah.
So does it feel like maybe it's cut up, like Agents of Mayhem is maybe a show that a saint is watching? And maybe that's why it's cut up that way. Because, like, every time you have those breaks and those loading screens and the cut screens, it's because it's when it would be going to quote-unquote commercial break.
Possibly. And like I said, like, there's a setup here, but, like, it is jarring. So, like, hopefully they're going to pull us out of it eventually.
It will probably happen at the end. Like, think about, like, how Saints games work, right? Like, if there is a flip, it's all the way at the end as kind of like a ha-ha, doink-da-doink. Also, I watched Popstar Never Stop.
Oh, God, I want to watch that.
So that's why I have Doink the Doink in my head, and I apologize, but I'm sorry. Lonely Island is just funny as shit, and I will never not laugh at their stuff. Anyway, because that's what it sounds like to me, when you're like, oh, you get this thing, and it's, like, highly tense, and it's like, now you gotta sit through a loading screen. Okay, now I get into it. It sounds like they're building up frustration on purpose to me.
Possibly. That's what it sounds
like.
Like, they're poking the dragon a little bit. I really just kind of want to get into it. And, like, I worry that, you know, this might be a ploy, like, absolutely. But, like, they're risking quite a lot with the gaming demographic right now. And you gotta remember,
like, this is a new IP, right? So there's a whole lot of water testing going on here with this deal.
What can gamers tolerate?
Because it's not a safe, it's not a Saints Row game, okay? It's Agents of Mayhem. Even though it's obviously inspired by the Saints and happens in the same universe.
Yep. I mean, the agents all have the fleur-de-lis somewhere on their clothes. Okay. And they wear the signature purple.
It's gonna happen. Like, you're gonna get there. So I would say give it some time, like all things. And recognize, again, what it is and what it's not. Because I think a lot of times when you have new IPs that come out, first of all, creating something completely new is not easy. I'm like, but also at the same time, it's really not easy when you already have established this big Goliath of a franchise that you're known for, right?
Right.
In honesty, remember when Mass Effect Andromeda was announced? Okay, we were told Andromeda has no connection whatsoever to the Mass Effects that came before it, right? So don't expect it, and don't hold it up to this universe, because this is its own little one-off.
It's its own little shit show.
and it turned out to be its own little shit show. Now, there are things that I do like about Andromeda, and there are things I don't like about Andromeda.
Do you have more things that you dislike about it than you do like?
No, I ultimately have more likes than dislikes. Really, right now, my main dislike, because after the first update, the balance for fights got back in tune, balanced, if you will, because initially that felt a little off to me. Some of the pacing between riding around discovering things, because sometimes it could take forever, versus stuff that, like, literally you dropped on the planet and the thing you're looking for is right in front of you. I felt kind of weird, like, if the core of your game is supposed to be about exploration, there should be some level of exploration involved on my part. I should feel like I need to roam far at times, or at least roam, and not just walk 10 steps and boom, here it is. And I feel like in later missions that became much more balanced as well. But overall, my positives outweigh my negatives. You know, I liked the different diversity of characters. I thought that there were, you know, as always, some characters that had some great dialogue back and forth, some that didn't. There weren't any surprises for me, but I played a lot of Mass Effect games, and I played a lot of RPG games, so I could tell the heel from the non-heel early. I could tell, you know, the guarded but is gonna have my back stalwart versus the I'm just here for the fun and the sex, and I'm out, but actually I'm not, and see past my insecurity. Like, all of those stereotypical characters, I understood exactly who they were right off the bat. So there wasn't anybody that was, like, on discovery to figure out who they were. Versus, like, in the first trilogy of Mass Effect games, you were figuring out who your Shepard was.
Right.
All those games. I was not figuring out who Ryder was in Andromeda. Like, I was already foisted a big old backstory of, yeah, so you and your twin brother, you kind of got some harsh feels for your dad, and you feel like your dad didn't have no feels for you, and, oh, you're an army brat, and your mom's dead, and you kind of sort of blame your dad about it, and you're foisted into this mission because you don't really want to, but you're doing it for your mom. So, like, there was all this stuff that was already set for you, so it was really hard to be like, I'm going to choose to be absolutely everything that the game doesn't want me to be, because the choices that they set up for you basically were always designed to get you to understand who your father was and then to feel like a little bit of an asshole for thinking that he was actually an uncaring fool. Because he kind of risked the entire safety of mankind in the hopes of bringing back your mom. Hashtag mom not dead. Also, spoiler alert. Whoops. Just in case you didn't play it.
It wasn't me this time. It wasn't spoilicious. Doing it again.
That one slipped out. My bad. But still, I think that, you know, there's a long way for agents to go, and I have a feeling that as people get further into the game, like, it will reveal itself how it is connected, and it's probably going to be like a funny fuck you type thing, because that's what Volition does. So I'm looking forward to playing it. And I was really looking forward to playing Crackdown, but, like, if I looked at the two games side by side, hell, even if I swapped their colors, if I'm honest with myself, I wouldn't be able to tell the games apart. And that's a bad place to be when you're marketing a game, especially when your game, which is third in a franchise, and is supposed to be this big mover of a thing on your platform, is coming out after this other one that's almost indistinguishable from it. That's a bad place to be going into holiday. I still don't think that it needs to go a whole year delay. Because like I said, from what I played at E3, it looks solid. So I don't know what's going on with Crackdown 3. I would like some transparency and just some honesty, frankly. Just be like, there's more things we actually want to put in the game. We looked at the landscape, we did some deep thinking, and you know what? We want to do some more things with the game. So we're going to take a little more time to put those things in, make sure that they work the way that we want them to work from day one, to give you guys a great experience with this Crackdown outing. And then I'd be like, okay, cool. I get it. Like, yeah, this space right now, it's kind of hard to make a game that's distinguishable. Okay, I'm used to having games where I can roam the entire city. I can choose my own adventure. I can choose what missions I want to run whenever I want to run them. That's not a novel idea. I've been doing it in Grand Theft for ages now. I'm pretty much doing it, like, even Zelda lets me do it, so that's not a groundbreaking mechanic, okay? Being able to destroy everything around me, that's also not a groundbreaking mechanic. I have been doing that in Grand Theft Auto, in pretty much any and all Saints Row games, Agents of Mayhem. I can even do it in a bunch of other Nintendo games, and not to mention, like, so that's not a new mechanic, okay? You know, having the ability to run around and build up my own character the way I want to says hi from every RPG game ever on the planet, you know? So, like, there's not a lot of uniqueness there, and, you know, it has to be a hit because they've put a lot of resources into it. So I would like some more transparency around it. I'm hopeful that the game, when it is finally freaking released, will do well and be solid, because I'm still looking forward to Crackdown 3 because I enjoy just the funny side of I'm supposed to be a peacekeeper, but actually what I end up doing is causing the most amount of chaotic damage to my city in the process of saving it ever. I love that about the game. So I'm looking forward to it coming out soon. I also have some concerns because I was thinking that, you know, part of the reason that they may have pulled it is in Crackdown, you are basically playing an officer going around.
Yeah. Maybe they're being a little, you know, trying to be sensitive to the climate.
I feel like that probably was a bigger piece of the conversation at this moment in time of all things. And if that's the case, again, just be transparent about it and be like, look, you know what, we're going to move the release schedule because we don't feel that this is the right time to bring the game out. We love and thank everybody for their passion. We're going to add some more things to the game too. Here's some things to tide you over. Hell, put out a demo and just like, and then leave it alone for a little bit. But I feel like
that let people get that initial reaction out of their way so that they're no longer...
And they can disassociate the two. And in the meantime, you have dipsticked now what the interest in your game is based off of how many people actually jumped on the demo. So you can feel more confident about your game release. And you can also use it as a time to get some feedback to see if maybe some of your features need to be worked on.
Do you think they'll pull Far Cry because of...
No. UB gives no fucks on any of that, because if they did, they wouldn't have announced that Far Cry at E3, because shit was already popping off then.
Yeah, so, because I mean, so it's only gotten worse since then.
Exactly. UB's just like, we're going to ride the horse we came in on. And we're going to continue to ride the horse we came in on. And I think that just, you know, says a lot about an international company that's internationally based, European based, versus a company that, for in all intents and purposes, even though Microsoft is an international company, Xbox is primarily North American based because they're in Redmond. So, you know, I think that there are some other sensitivities that are also being paid attention to, and that's okay. I do think that there's a responsibility that developers have and publishers have to being sensitive to the environment that they release their content in. I'm sure that there are a bunch of other games that are also considering or reconsidering their launch windows, given the things that are happening, you know, not just in North America, but are happening across the globe right now. And so I think that that's smart, and I think that that's responsible. The only thing I would say is just be upfront, honest, and transparent about why you're making those decisions. It will only endear me more to your brand or to the product. If Phil came out and said, you know what, we're really sensitive to what's going on in the U.S. right now, and we don't think that introducing a game where you play a police officer hunting down these miscreants in the city with ultimate violence, basically, and destruction, where primarily, frankly, the majority of the game gangs in the game are depicted as different people of color. Yes, there are Caucasian gangs and kingpins and things like that, but there are also people of color similar to those that maybe, just maybe, it might be taken the wrong way. So we've decided it would be irresponsible of us to introduce this game right now. We are going to give you guys a demo to hold you over. I can guarantee you that the game will be coming out, but we're going to be looking at a new release window.
I wonder
I would have been like, slow clap.
Wonder if Wolfenstein may be thinking about
upping their release window? I don't think so. I think Bethesda is going to be like, hey, when this game is ready, it's going to be ready. But their advertising campaign had changed. Like, I'm very sure that their lead advertising is all going to turn into punching Nazis.
Probably.
What else do we need to say? Punch Nazis. Wolfenstein. Like, that's... Game sells itself at this point. You know, I that's all you need. What I'm saying is I'm hopeful that with taking the extra time will allow them to tweak whatever things that they want to tweak and let them get into a window where they feel comfortable publishing the game and that it gets the time and the attention that it deserves, because I've been waiting for Crackdown way too long and I just need the wait to be over, and I thought it was going to be this holiday season and now it's not, and I has a sad.
I'm sorry, bro.
So I'm going to let you talk about the game that you've been playing, and then I'm going to end up with my game, because my game is real deep and dark and,
And we already kind of started with a heavy topic today.
Right. So let's lighten it up.
Let's take a right into Nostalgia Town.
This is going.
And I definitely think it's far more my nostalgia than yours. I actually think back when we were still doing
I think we were still doing the magazine. Like, we did a nostalgia, like, what brought you into gaming? And I believe I talked about specifically Sonic the Hedgehog 3 with Sonic and Knuckles, I think. But I think I kind of talked about the franchise as a whole.
Yep. So you're thinking of the retrospective series that we did.
Yeah.
That was originally going to be for the magazine, but we decided to put it on the site instead. So your retrospective piece is still on the site.
So, oh man. I talked extensively.
All the editors at the time did a piece. So if you want to check out something really cool, the topic was, what game made you a gamer?
And literally for me, it was, I mean, like, I had played Super Mario, it didn't resonate with me until I got my own console, and it was different from yours.
You weren't a Mario freak until you got a Nintendo 64.
64, right, which was way after I had had my Sonic, my Genesis. Now, granted, I mean, if I managed to get a Saturn, like, who knows where I would have ended up, but we just did not have the money for me to get a Saturn.
Nope.
But yeah, like, Genesis and Sonic in particular really kind of did it for me. So, of course, when I found out that in August, on the 15th, actually, which was a little bit, I think, last week, there was going to be a worldwide release of Sonic Mania for the Nintendo Switch, the PlayStation 4, the current consoles, and I think Windows computers. I don't think they made one for the Mac, unfortunately.
Nope.
But when I heard...
been all over that Mac version.
Oh my god. But as soon as I heard Sonic Mania, at first when I heard the name, I was like, please don't tell me they're going to do all, like, the 3D Sonics and, like, port them over, because they were all really shitty. Because I stopped playing Sonic after Sonic and Knuckles. Like, I didn't do Sonic CD. I didn't do any of the ports later. I did none of the 3Ds, because, like, they were shitty. Like, and people were shitting on Sonic, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't tell people that I was a Sonic fan. Let me just go into this bush right here and hide out for a while. Oh, yeah, Mario? I like Mario. And come out of the bush and just assimilate with the culture, because, you know, preservation is key. You don't need to, if you don't need to martyr yourself, don't. Kind of, and I already have that on my back by being a Resident Evil apologist, so, like, I have enough flays on my back as it is. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, I'm checking my accounts to make sure I got the money, because I'm getting it. And sure enough, like, I obviously had the money, and I got it for the Nintendo Switch, because I want to play more games on our Switch, because we do happen to have one. And I mean, I've got Splatoon, and I already played the fuck out of Zelda, and, like, I'm really not going back to Zelda, though I should, to get the, like, last 5 shrines I haven't found yet. So I can feel like the completionist in me would be satisfied, but I'm just a little lazy right now. I was like, nostalgia. I'm in the mood for nostalgia. And Sonic Mania, which was made by Sonic fans, they got people on their team who actually did some of the ports of the game. So, like, you had people who were down there at ground level building stuff up from, like, the past. Now, mind you, Sonic's been around since, you know, the 1990s, which for some of you doesn't seem that long ago. And for other people like me, it feels like a lot of years ago. Like,
yeah, too many
years ago. and your eyes get kind of misty, like, oh man, the 90s. I remember the 90s. It was great.
I remember the 90s more than you remember the 90s. #comment.
I know. Well, you also remember the 80s, so...
Girl!
don't shit on my umbrella. Anyway.
We don't need to go there.
Anyway, so Sonic Mania is obviously the game I'm going to talk about. Developed by Headcanon and Pagoda West Games. I think it was published, obviously, by Sega.
No! When you start it up, does it go, Sega?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
yes, it does. It hits all the sweet notes. Like, it really, really does. And it goes straight into, like, if you wait for after the title screen, you do get, like, a little animation. Which, if you've watched Game Grumps, when they do, like, their animated Grumps, like, one of the animators who does or has done several of these animated Grumps actually does the opening animation for the game. And it's super cute. And, like, it reminds you about how whimsical Sonic was and is, really. And, like, you know, just having fun, bopping through rings,
Tails is cute as fuck. Like, you just want a fox with two tails. And, like, Knuckles is, like, looking all cool. You know, I'm not trying to say nothing, but I totally feel like Knuckles is totally, like, the black guy of the group. Like, I want the black people in the black vote to, like,
wait,
commandeer Knuckles.
Are you only now coming to this realization that we had,
like, no, but I'm just, saying it out loud because it was never something I said before.
I mean, it's obvious that Knuckles is a Rastafarian Jamaican, right? Like, you understand.
Well, I mean, like, he's a Nikita. But anyway.
I'm just saying. I know,
but like, if people were not sure or aware, I totally feel like if he's not, he should be. I'm just saying,
Knuckles is Jamaican. Obviously, Tails is like the perky, upbeat, can't anything go wrong in the world, Caucasian.
What's Sonic then?
Another Caucasian.
Yeah. He's the other type. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. But anyway.
He's gotta go fast. So I guess he's the one on cocaine? I don't know.
Hey. He does him. He gotta go fast. But anyway, so like, it's really just
hot dog.
It's just super cute, and it's like, it brings us back to Sonic before the cartoons, which kind of botched it a lot. And then the second iteration of the cartoon, which, while better, still, you know, kind of brought us, like, the darker side of, you know, Dr. Eggman, Robotnik, you know, putting robotics in animals and shit. Like, they kind of went really heavy with the second iteration. But, like, this was just fun, light, and enjoyable. The way that I think Sonic was always meant to kind of be interpreted. Like, it was never meant to have this big, fundamental, deep-rooted message. It was just supposed to be, I'm a cool dude, I run fast, I get coins, and I also get gems and shit. That's all it was ever supposed to be. So Sonic Mania literally starts off, depending, you know, when you start your Mania mode, who you choose to play. So you can play as Sonic by himself, you can play as Tails by himself, you can play as Knuckles by himself, or you can also play as Sonic and Tails, very much like in Sonic 2. Now, granted, very similar to Sonic 2, if you're not playing with another person to play as Tails, then you've got AI Tails, who sucks balls all day, every day, sucks balls, does not help you, is more of a hindrance than anything else, and I don't know why they'd make us relive that. But anyway,
sometimes
it is an option.
Sometimes AI Tails, like, hits an enemy.
No. Because,
sometimes?
No. Now, don't get me wrong, like, I'm a big fan of Tails. I think, like, I loved Sonic 1, but I remember playing the shit out of Sonic 2.
Yeah.
Like, so much, because I was all about Tails. Like, I wanted to be able to fly. And that was, like, his big selling point, which that's still very much the case. However, you know, when you play as as Sonic with Tails, like, you come to an area, and you're like, oh, this would be a great time for Sonic to, like, pick my ass up. Well, AI Tails, he ain't gonna do that. He gonna stand there with you because he kind of, very much like the old Mickey Mouse Capade game where you had Minnie essentially just mirrored whatever you did as Mickey. That's what Tails' AI seems to do when Tails isn't being operated by a player. So, like, you know, it's not just gonna do stuff and try to figure itself out. It's just gonna see if you're gonna jump, because then it's gonna jump. Or if you're gonna spin dash, then it's gonna spin dash. But, like, Tails does not do, the Tails AI is very shallow, like a puddle, which is unfortunate, because, so as
shallow it, like a puddle.
That's like a puddle. Funny. I just, it's the truth, and I'm an adult now, and I can say that. I, in true Sonic fangirl appreciation, have 4 different games going on right now where I'm playing as each one of them individually, and I do have a Sonic and Tails save file that I just started, but I'm really not keen on jumping onto that because I know I'm going to get really frustrated at the fact that Tails will not sense what I want to do and then do it. You could feel the love in this game, and I think that's what people are gravitating towards the most. I've played the most as basic Sonic because, I mean, going through the game, you realize, you know, because Knuckles and Tails already have inbuilt in abilities that Sonic does not possess, you know, flying, gliding, climbing walls. Tails can also swim in water. where the other two just kind of sink and then make that little bonk sound when they drown.
Right.
So they had to give Sonic some additional attributes when he has, like, buffs on, like the fire or the water or the electricity. Like, they had to beef him up a little bit because he generally is, like, a vanilla character with very little additions to him. And all those are back in their fashion. The animation and, like, the game style is just so reminiscent of the 90s. Like, you hear the 8-bit music or 64-bit or 16-bit, whichever fucking bit it is, you know, and it's kind of remixed. Like, in the first levels of each game, like, each area you're in, the first stage, they kind of stuck with the general or basic music from the actual game. And then in the second stage of the game, they actually make it a little bit more remixy. So it feels new and exciting. And you're not just playing through the levels. This is not just, you know, like a port of Sonic 1 through 3 and Sonic and Knuckles. Like, we're getting, like, a remix list of some of the best levels from all the games.
And even
some new ones. I just got to Studiotopius, which I think is a brand new stage altogether.
Yep.
And the music is super catchy. Like, you hear yourself singing it and humming it when you're folding laundry and all the socks. Or when you're cooking yourself some steak.
Fold all the socks. Or at least pair them.
But, like, it just gets to you and it infects you and it's just really great. And, you know, and there's all these... So, if you remember, Ninja, back in my Sonic days, I was really about getting those Chaos Emeralds.
Oh, doing you got that. All the emeralds. When you were on an emerald hunt, there was no talking to you.
That's right. In the original Sonic game, there were the... checkpoint baubles, I like to call them. And if you had so many certain amount of rings, by the time you hit them, you could go to a world. And literally, it was like an acid trip. Like, it was like shiny flickeries everywhere. And you were kind of free-falling through, like, this weird pinball-y type thing, trying to get to these gems that you would roll on to, like, dissolve so that you could get to the gems. And that was basic Sonic. Then, when you finally got to, like, Sonic 3, you got... the 3D, you know, wrapping around the blue spheres to make them into rings. And, like, the music would get faster and the tempo would get faster and then you would move faster. And those were the ones that I was, like, really, legitly, like, no, don't talk to me. There's such a focal point. Like, I have to concentrate. Like, everything is out to get me in this level. Well, in Sonic Mania, that has come back. However, that is not how you obtain Chaos Emeralds now, which to me, I don't like that very much because the nostalgia aspect that they decided to use to be the levels that you get your Chaos Emeralds from is a Sonic I never played. So I get to have this new experience of learning this mechanic and this
and
experience.
And you don't like that?
I do and I don't, because, like, the thing about nostalgia is, like as soon as it starts up and, like, your heart starts racing, you're like, oh, man, and, like, your hands start
but
getting into, like...
But that's supposed to be the hook to get you in there, and then they can give you the remix and the new.
Right. And I'm not mad about
it. I think, like, you and, like, maybe 10 other people played Sonic 3. I can't even describe to you a world that was in Sonic 3. I don't remember it.
Oh my god, well, like, the first one, it was pretty much like Green
Sonic
Hill Zone.
Like, here's the thing, in my Sonic world, like, I remember one, because we played the shit out of one, and I remember Sonic and Knuckles.
Wow, what a jump for you, bro. There's all this other stuff going on. But I didn't play, and here's the thing, so, like, the way to obtain Chaos Emeralds in Sonic Mania is now through doing the running mock Catch the UFO from Sonic CD. Which I didn't have Sonic CD. So, like,
no,
as I'm playing through.
Didn't have that kind of money.
No. So, as I'm playing it, and, like, here I am, like, getting super excited. I find, like, my super big ring, and I'm ready to see the 3D sphere that I have to navigate. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, I've never played this. And, like, and I got excited about it, but it's a mechanic that I'm not exposed to. And I'm like, oh. I have to actually learn how to do this. Whereas, you know, other diehard Sonic fans who...
You gotta go
had
fast.
Had the meat,
the
right.
Because you need the rings to get the time to go fast.
You need the blue spheres to get up to Mach 3. Because I don't think you go any faster than Mach 3 in those levels. And you need the rings because that's what keeps your counter up.
because your time will run out, and if you don't reach the proper speed, you can't get the UFO. And I didn't figure this out until about my fourth attempt, and I'm like, why is this hard? And then my husband does it and gets it right away, and I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you, your general.
He probably played it.
No. He played 3, and he played Knuckles, but he didn't play Sonic CD. So he's just a naturally better gamer than me, which I slowly have to just realize that there are people better than me at Sonic. Granted, like, the fact that he's not as much of a fan of Sonic as me makes me a little mad that he's naturally good, but he's just a good gamer in general, so I should just get used to that. I'm looking forward to these new levels and these new bosses because they're pushing our expectation of nostalgia. So, like, when you go into a level that I got to the flying battery level, which, like, it's got the best music. Like, that and the Chemical Zone were always, like, my ish songs to listen to. When I played these games, it brought me right back. I'm like, I should remember where everything is. And, like, my muscle memory kicks in, and I'm, like, back at home in front of the boob tube because, you know, now our TVs don't have tubes in them because they're flat screens.
You said like, boobs.
I said boobs. And I was in front of that giant TV with our mom telling us to sit back because I was going to fuck up my eyes. And granted, she was right. I should have totally listened to her, but I didn't.
Yeah, you should have.
I should have. But then all of a sudden, like, the things that seem so familiar, they've added elements from different games. Like, it's a big melting pot of Sonic. So, like, it's familiar enough, but there's still so many new things. And there are so many places on a map that you can't explore. Now they don't really give you a time. It doesn't seem like they give you a countdown, like, you have so many minutes to complete the level. Because the level is so massive, they want you to kind of figure it out, because in standard games, you had 5 minutes to get through a stage. So, like, if you were at 450, like, the music would speed up, and you're like, fuck, you gotta get to that sign, and if you didn't, like, you would die, and you'd have to start over. And, you know, I think that was something that fans didn't care about in the initial, you know, setup of the game. So now that they're giving you more time to fully explore and see what they've done and what they haven't done is, like, it's like a tip of the hat to those that came before, and what a great way to bring something from the 90s and make it relevant, but also make it new for people who've never played a Sonic game. And it is, I think, definitely approachable. I don't think the mechanics are very, you know, they're not earth-shattering, but they're not, like, something all kids could do either. So there is a little bit of a learning curve, especially when you are going through those bonus levels and stages. So that's all stuff that you will have to, obviously, retrain your fingers to do. And I think, you know, being a gamer now, like, as I was going through those secret levels and I was fucking up on basic stuff, like, I could hear little Panda in the back of my mind going, what is wrong with you? What, you are so much better than this. And, like, hearing her and her and me coming back together. And I mean, granted, I know that that's not real. She's not real. And it's just me, you know, projecting myself outward. But, like, I felt it for a second. Here I am with little me playing this game that we both still equally have this love and appreciation for. And if I'm feeling that, I know that there are other people out there who are also feeling it. So, like, and it's only, like, I paid $21 on my Switch. So it's not a super expensive game. Like, they're not telling you it's, like, $40 or $60. It's $20. And I actually think for what I'm feeling now through playing it, that, like, I would have easily paid $25 to $30 for it. Like, the nostalgia was enough to get me in there, and then the new experience, a new take on the game and the mechanics is what sells me on it more. And the fact that the story and narrative is deeper now, because, you know, we're jumping kind of through time a little bit, and I didn't really go into the story about it a lot, but instead of the Chaos Emeralds being, you know, what, you know, Dr. Egg, you know, Eggman is trying to get, he's gotten this other gem that apparently was, like, in the ground from the start with these robots, and it kind of allows them to, like, manipulate through time. So, like, some of these newer levels are, like, in a future where, you know, Dr. Robotnik Eggman has succeeded in a way, and, like, you're seeing these other timelines of what could have been. So, like, it's really kind of interesting. I'm really about it. And I'm still very, very much in the beginning of the game, and I'm going to play through it as all the characters, because obviously with their skill sets, playing would be a little bit different for each character. But I'm so happy this came out. And in the state that the world's in right now, it was kind of nice to be able to retreat back to a simpler time. But hell yeah, Sonic Mania. Like, hell fucking yeah.
Oh, does everybody feel good, warm, and fuzzy?
Yeah, because now you're gonna
throw us in all crashing all the, down.
All down.
All fall down. I've been playing Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, which we talked a little bit about a couple of podcast episodes ago, and I mentioned it was going to be one of the games I was going to be playing to talk about on the show. And I had a couple of people actually hit me up on Twitter. They slid right in my DMs, were like, I can't wait for you to talk about this game because I have thoughts. So number one, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice is a PlayStation 4 game. It is done by the crafty team over at Ninja Theory. The game will run you $29.99 on the PlayStation Store. And I will tell you right now, and I've only been playing a couple of hours into the game itself probably will run you anywhere between 8 and 10 hours to complete. So it's not a long game, but it is a deep game. It is a game that, if you can handle it, absolutely need to play with headphones on. And the reason why I say this is the game is and focuses around the psychosis of the main character, Senua. So she has voices talking to her at all times. In order for you to really get the full effect of those voices being in your head, they need to be in your head. So you want to have your headphones on. It's freaky. I'm going to tell you right now, it's freaky when you do it because the audio is engineered so well that at times, as I was playing the game, I started to think of the voices as my own voices in my head and not the game voices in my head. And that shit's spooky. But the basic story is Senua belongs to this tribe, kind of Celtic in nature, old school Norse, and had the love of her life, Dillion, die. I haven't gotten far enough in the game to realize exactly how he died, but the death, I believe, spurred on her psychosis. And so she carries a skull on her back, wrapped up in cloth, that at times when she goes to communicate with it, will speak to her and will breathe. And you will see this, like, flash, and then the animation starts where you can see breaths being puffed through the sides of the cloth, which is kind of freaky. And there are different voices that are going off in her head, voices that will, you know, tell her that the darkness is going to consume her and that she should turn back, and voices that have fights with amongst themselves about whether or not she's doing something for herself or somebody else, or is seeing things that she wants to see just because that's what she wants to believe versus what reality actually is. Absolutely freaky. Senua is on a mission, she believes, to bring Dillion back to life. She is trying to get into hell in order to strike a deal with a god that can resurrect the dead, in the hopes of being able to get Dillion resurrected. Huh. But she's going through and suffering through a psychotic break while making this attempt. And there are all different kinds of voices that are talking to her at times. There's this one guy who talks to her. I can't remember his name right this minute. But he is basically her guide through the realm to try and get to hell. Mm-hmm. And so there are different runes that, as you go through areas, you can interact with by focusing your sight and hear him basically give you the history of the god, what you're trying to do, the area that you're in, and just, you know, general knowledge that you're supposed to have. And as you find each of these runes, you start to understand a little bit more around all these different realms that you may or may not go through, like Niflheim, the realm of the good elves versus the realm of the bad elves, all these different things. So it's, you're constantly bombarded with these really strong visuals and all this information that's being told to you from these two big parties, the two largest voices in your head. You're not exactly sure that both voices are for you and spurring you on to courage. And there are moments where you fall into your own darkness and you have to battle. So everything that happens in the game, the camera is always a little back and behind Senua, up and to the right. So it's kind of an over-the-shoulder view as she's exploring the world. It is very much a linear path and linear story because, again, you're trying to get through this break that Senua is going through. Right. And solving all these different puzzles to get into different areas. And even with all of that that's going on, you're still trying to figure out exactly what has happened, you know, and why you're comfortable talking to this skull that you carry on your back, knowing full well that you probably can't bring back the dead, but yet Senyu is focused on doing this. And you can see that at times when you look at her, that she is definitely in a state of shock or delirium. When she falls into bouts of darkness, she actually has to do battle. So that's the time when battle happens. And after your first introduction of these demons that bring themselves to you, you end up losing the battle. You're forced to lose the battle. And a message displays on the screen. And it is also spoken in your ear that the darkness is starting to creep into your body. You can actually see it start to physically take over Senyu's body. And you have to disassociate yourself and go, okay, but this is probably psychosis that she's bringing on. This isn't real, but it feels real and looks real to her. And the message and the voice says that the darkness has started to creep in. If you fail too many times and the darkness spreads to your brain, you will die and all your progress will be lost. So I'm like, oh, great. Now I got to deal with permadeath too.
Oh, no.
So if you lose too many of those battles with the darkness overtakes you and the game tells you that that'll be the end of your story and you're going to have to start all over again. And I'm like, oh, hell no. This is no good. Now, at no point in time are you ever given prompts as to what buttons do what when you're going through this world. You actually start the game off on a log and all the voices are talking to you as Senyu is paddling up this river and you start to see bodies that have been mounted on spikes and things like that. And she starts talking about fears and you hear another voice going, why isn't she looking at any of these things? And then that's when I realized, oh, I can control the camera and I can look to the left. And then they start talking about, see, that'll be you. That'll be us if we're not careful. And I'm just like, shut up, voices. Shut up, voices. You don't know me. You don't know my life. I might be able to get Senyu through this. So it's a very different game experience. Really unlike any that I have done before, where I don't know that this is an accurate depiction of psychosis. I have not gone through that myself. I know people directly that have had psychic breaks and gone through them. I don't know what their experience is like, and I can't pretend to know what that experience is like. I do know about Ninja Theory's dedication to getting details correct. I do know that they worked with several different physicians and doctors while going through the process of making this game. So I do have the feeling of this game is unnerving if you allow yourself to be taken in by it. And I'm allowing myself to be taken in by it. It is absolutely a phenomenally gorgeous game, especially if you have a PlayStation Pro or a 4K TV. It is stunning. It is stunning to look at. I do not have a 4K TV or a PlayStation Pro, and it looks gorgeous on my screen, but I had looked at a trailer for the game that was running on a PlayStation Pro and on a 4K screen, and I gotta tell you, it was phenomenal. It was one of the main reasons why I was like, okay, I definitely have to play this game, because I love Ninja Theory's aesthetic. They tell great stories, and they create games where they're not worried about overloading the player with game mechanics. They are worried about giving the player a hell of a story. And I think that's part of the reason why I enjoyed Heavenly Sword. Because I enjoyed the story that was being told more so than the kind of wonky mechanics. And Ninja Theory has come out and said, hey, we're a little bit different. We're not an independent. We're not a AAA. We just want to tell great stories in a phenomenal visual medium. So that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to focus on. So like at no point in time, like I said in this game, do you have like any tutorial where it like teaches you to dodge or teaches you to fight? It does not. Like I had to sit there and like run, and there's no easy run button, by the way. But like when I was brought into the fight, I was moving my character around and just like hitting every button, which made me more frantic to see what they did so I could figure out how to fight. Because there's no hey, dipshit, press X to dodge in a direction, and press square to actually swing, and press circle to kick, and...
You know, it'd be really funny if...
Why?
If
focus.
Even if it set you up for that, but because she's going through this psychotic break where, you know, things that seem normal aren't normal, where all of a sudden they started remapping your buttons without telling you, so you'd have to learn a different mashing
system.
And
that's the thing, I don't put past the system that that may happen at some point. It's very, very possible. And so it is just... Like I said, this game is unlike any game that I've played before. And, you know, usually when I'm presented with a game that tells me that there's going to be a lot of violence and obviously there's going to be, you know, a lot of psych things that go along, I expect for there to be jump scares. I expect for there to be, especially when you're talking about psychosis, some horrible breaks that will happen in the gameplay. I expect for there to be, you know, issues. I'll put it that way. I expect for there to be issues, right? And typically, you know, I don't play those kinds of games. But I am so enthralled by the aesthetic of the game, the character of Senua. Like, it is just, in watching her move, in watching how she reacts, and listening to all these dialogues that are happening in her head. I want to know how the story ends. I need to know how the story ends.
You're going to have to be very careful. You're not going to be able to go into this.
I need to get to the end of the story. And so I'm going to finish this game. And when I do, I'll tell you guys all about it. But it is definitely a hell of a ride. So if you value a good story above having a lot of mechanics, and you got a PlayStation 4, I'm sorry. This game is totally worth the $30 they're asking for it, in my opinion. So you should definitely give it a try. I do not regret a single dollar that I spent on this game already. And I've only played this game for about 1 hour and 10 minutes. I'm probably going to play this game multiple times so I can hear all of the conversations that are happening. Because sometimes, when especially like when fights are going on and things like that, there's dialogue that goes off and I can't focus on that because I'm so focused on not messing up in this fight. But it's incredibly interesting, and it is so different than anything I've done before, and I can't say enough about just that alone, because, you know, I've been used to, here's your hero, here's your backstory, you know, like a Kratos, Ares screwed you over, let's go kill him. Like, I don't know what happened, and I now have to trust all these voices, and I don't think that they're all trustworthy either to help me figure that all out. And I have this all going in my head because of all these voices.
I think,
and it's a game that's doing this to me, which makes
right.
it just amazingly cool.
I'm really surprised that you're taking, you know, this game that has a strong emotional resonance. Really, like, you're really taking the journey personally, like, you're bringing it to a very real place, which, you know, I think you're going to get a stronger experience coming out of it, because you're just going to feel more connected and immersed to what's going on in the story and the narrative. But I mean, most times when you get a heavy game like that, you know, you tend to stay shy a little away from
it. I do. I typically try to stay away from the heavy games. You know, the last real heavy game that I played, in all honesty, was Heavy Rain, because I did not find Beyond Two Souls to be heavy. I did find it to be interesting. And, you know, of course, we haven't been able to get into Detroit yet, right? But the last heavy game that I played was Heavy Rain, and I could only play that game once. It emotionally took a massive toll on me.
Right.
Because I got so involved in its story, because it drew me in. And that, I can tell you right now, that exact same thing has happened with Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice.
I want you to be careful. Sister and I love you.
You don't want me to have a psychotic break.
Right, exactly. Like, if it feels like something's happening that could potentially trigger some negativity,
cool.
I want you to...
Some puppy videos. I get it.
Exactly. Okay, good. Because, like, I definitely want you to obviously feel, because they're setting the player up to have an emotional connection and resonance. Like, they want you to feel what the protagonist is feeling, you know, but don't feel too much. Just enough, though.
Just the tip?
Yeah. Like, that'd be good.
Anyway, you should definitely check this game out, sis. And like I said, for anybody else that enjoys, you know, the more get in your head, mess with your head kind of games, you absolutely should check out Hellblade: send you a sacrifice. I think it's totally worth the $30 if you enjoy those types of games. Or you just enjoy a Ninja Theory experience, which I do. With that being said, it's time to wrap things up here on the show. I hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. If you did, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast. You can do that in iTunes on the desktop or on your iOS device through the podcast application. Just search for the Eshcast and subscribe. You can also get our podcast through Stitcher Radio, Google Play, VogNetwork.com, or really anywhere fine podcasts are aggregated. You can probably find our show. Make sure that you check us out on social. We are on Facebook, Facebook.com/Land of Esh. We are on Instagram and Twitter at ESH News. I'll be taking a bunch of photos and posting them to our Instagram while I am at PAX Dev and at PAX West. So please make sure that you subscribe so that way you can keep up with the daily diary, visual diary, that I'll be sharing while I'm there. Also, be sure to check out our website, electricsisterhood.com. Every review, preview, as well as the podcast archive can be found there. We've got links right on the sidebar to bookmark all of our core pages, including our podcast and live page coverage of events that we do. The entire team contributes all kinds of great reviews and preview articles, as well as editorials on a weekly basis. You can even get those in the Apple News application on your iOS device if you use that. So if you do, please search for Electric Sisterhood and tap that For Me button so that we show up in your For You recommendations. We really appreciate that. There's a plethora of things that are going on in the Land of Esh. We are not the only website and podcast that exists. So if you enjoy what we do, then definitely make sure that you check out all the projects from our main authors across the web. That includes KBD over at b3crew.com with his weekly podcast, No Borders, No Race. It's going to be spinning some classic 60s and 70s J-rock, J-pop in the show every week. So make sure that you check that out. He also covers everything nerdy you can think of, anime, manga, theater, movies, video games, you name it. KBD's got an eye on it. For Wednesdays, streaming live Wednesday night at 9 Eastern on Twitch, our homie Hamsterman2049. You can check out his articles definitely on the Electric Sisterhood site, but you can also check out smashrook.com if you want to get the link real easy to his live streams, which he does, like I said, on Wednesday nights at 9. Make sure that you hit up our Facebook page, facebook.com/randevesh, to get that link. He usually posts it about 10 minutes before he goes live, so that way you can find him on the Twitch and watch what he's playing, and he plays everything from new and old and the obscure titles in between, so definitely check that out. Then we get to one of my faves, even though I don't like to play faves, it's still the truth, one of my faves, Phil the Issues Guy with Phil's Recap and Review, my favorite recap person on YouTube ever. I love Phil and what he does. His recaps are hilarious and informative, which it's just a great time all the way around. So make sure that you check out Phil's Recap and Review page to catch his archive, as well as some of his written reviews, his issuesprogram.com. And last, but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, giving you the stuff that nerds crave, from anime and manga to comics and video games and beyond. If you're a nerd and you're talking about it, so are the guys over at nerdcrave.com. So make sure that you bookmark all of our sites, find us on social, check out the stuff that we're sharing across the web, give us a like, give us a comment, tell all your friends about us, share us, blow us up, let us continue to do what we do for you and for ourselves. With that, it's time for me to call an end to this podcast. I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time,
titties.